And we're back on the rule of three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. This is actually the second attempt at this show, so if it seems a little lame, that's why. We did it once before. Well, or maybe I should say lamer than normal.
Or polished. What if it seems polished?
Yeah, well then I guess we have to do two takes for everyone. That's Brian Miller on the other
side.
Hello. And the topic we decided to talk about yesterday and that we're gonna rehash is probably the biggest news item of the week so far is and I still can't say this right. Sacre Mucce is
Scaramucci, I guess, actually.
Is here and gone.
We've spent about 10% as much time in total working on this podcast from stem to stern as he did as White House communications director. That is an accurate number.
And probably more comedy in the reign of Sacre Mucce.
Oh, he really packed it in. That guy had a tight set. He demonstrated something that you're gonna, I think you're gonna see more of though, which is that he just kept saying, "I love the president. I love the president." And apparently, like, he was on top of the world for like 3 days because he said he loved the president so many times and the president was thrilled with him.
Right.
Like, that's the part that he did that works.
It's never before in the history of this administration has it seemed more like an actual episode of a reality show.
Well, it had about a week-long plot.
Next week, Donald Trump brings in an outsider who was once critical of him.
Yeah, Scaramucci was like a guy in The Sopranos who in the very first scene, like, doesn't pay a gambling debt. You're like, he's not going to make it through the episode. I mean, started the episode, screw Antonio.
I think perhaps the reason why he left, I don't think he did anything wrong. I think he just got an offer to star in the Sopranos remake.
And it was
is it actually racist to actually say that that he seems like a wise guy?
I don't know. I mean, he definitely does seem very Italian, and he's from is he a New Jersey guy?
Don't know.
I don't know where he came from originally. Scaramouche, by the way, his name Scaramucci comes from the Italian word Scaramuccia, which literally translates to little skirmisher, which is even more interesting now because Trump is such a just down at his heart mean person. He just has to be so mean to everybody. And apparently, when Scaramucci was flying high for the first day or two, Trump's compliment to him was, "Wow, you're very impressive. I'd be I'd be worried if you were 7 inches taller." What a jerk!
Oh man, yesterday you brought this up to me, and I had to look it up too. There's actually a Wikipedia entry for Scaramucci. What it is that it's actually a clown.
Yeah, I mean, how perfect is it that according to the Wikipedia entry, a Scaramucci is specifically an Italian clown. It's a clown from the comedy dollar.
Which, by the way, brings to mind what? Funny? You mean like a clown?
Oh, sure. Like I'm funny to you? I'm here
for
your amusement.
Funny like a clown?
The role combined the characteristics of the servant and the masked henchman. Wow, on the nose. Usually attired, does burlesque, and he's often beaten by the harlequin for his boasting and cowardice. it's so close. I'm trying to think of another character type that we can have wander on next, you know? Like,
apparently a very popular character in the Punch and Judy shows.
Yes.
Is that he often ended up, Punch would often knock his head off so that the Scaramucci puppet would have a very long, extendable neck.
And it's, I mean, it's funny, like, if you think about it, he's been walking around all this time, even before now. He's like, hi, my name's Anthony Clown.
I read further down the entry, fascinating entry to me in Wikipedia. Look it up, ladies and gentlemen. But further down, they say that they have a little footnote, is that since his short tenure as communications director, is that the Wikipedia searches for Scaramouche has gone up 8,168%.
Sure. I mean, before, the only people looking it up were the occasional person who was reading out the lyrics of the Queen song, Bohemian Rhapsody, and going, oh.
I did that, too. I actually I did a little research. Since we picked the topic yesterday, I had a day to research, looked at the lyrics. Also, Basmilla.
Oh, what's that?
Yeah, there you go. I never even knew it was Basmilla. I had to look that up. It was because I always sang Mitch Miller. No.
I always thought Scaramouche was Scatamouche, just because of their, you know, British accents. Accent. And yeah, I thought it was just nonsense anyway. I didn't realize it was even an actual word.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that Basmilla was an actual word. I thought they just kind of said funny that thing. Basmilla means in the name of Allah.
Ah.
Which I guess points back to Freddie Mercury's heritage.
So, of 9/11, can we say blame it on the Basmilla?
That seems like the shortened version. If you're going to fly a plane into a building and you don't have the time to actually say Allah Akbar, you can just go Basmilla.
Huh. It sounds nicer, though, you know? It's got a nice little nicer look. It sounds like an Italian guy. Basmilla.
We mentioned yesterday probably the joke that went hackiest. It's probably set the world's record for going from original joke to hack. Was, yeah. When Scaramouche was appointed, everyone on Facebook within minutes, can you do the Fandango?
Yeah, that was that was the only time I can remember, and it wasn't one joke. You're right. That might be the single joke that went hack the fastest. When the P-tape rumor came out, way back before the election, or no, it was after the election. But I remember the P jokes. Like, you'd heard every one of them within 45 minutes, and you'd heard every one of them 100 times.
I think we actually did an episode about that.
We did.
It's because Saturday Night Live. Had to do them. They couldn't move on, and they couldn't come up with anything original. So it was kind of the same. It was kind of like the same thing. So by the time Saturday Night Live came on, it was like, wow, this stuff is, you know,
it's crazy how fast some of these, like this accelerated news cycle, and then the saturation point of Twitter and all these different late night shows. It's crazy how fast certain topics become hack. Like, Scaramouche, I did a Scaramouche joke on Monday night to open my set.
What was it?
I just said, don't worry, you guys are going to do a really short set. It's not going to last any longer than the tenure of your average White House communications director.
There you go.
I just, you know, sort of muttered it while I was getting my water bottle and my napkin set up or whatever, you know. But it was funny. Like, it was funny. It got a real nice pop laugh, and a few people were like, oh, nice. If you did that joke tonight, it would be like, really? Still? I mean, it's crazy how fast it's just like, you know, and so then Scaramouche was like, his tenure was...
Yeah, Scaramouche jokes are so July 2017.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening back to some old jokes from my notebook, or it was, you know, working on some sets, and went back like 2 months, and there was a couple of pretty decent bits that I was like, that already feels so dated.
Yeah, dude, that is like so July. It's August now. Get into August.
Yeah, it's crazy. So it's like comedy is moving at some exponential rate. And now, like, now that Scaramouche's tenure goes that fast, the comedy goes faster. I mean, at some point, if you're not on Twitter at the exact right 20-minute interval, it's going to be like it never happened.
Comedy has an expiration date, and you know what else does?
The end of the segment. And on the final segment of Rule of Three, we're going to talk about a summertime tradition. But before that, a few people were asking me, not via the podcast, but just in general, what I was up to last week. And I was doing a writing packet for a late night show. And it's one of those inside baseball-y things, I guess, that I've been around long enough to forget that there was a time when not only did I certainly not know what a writing packet was, but didn't know that it was something that I should even know existed. It was an unknown unknown.
Or should be working on, or should be practicing. Or
right.
For those of you outside the industry, a writing packet is sort of like a resume for a comic that wants to be a writer on a comedy show.
Yeah, except it's a resume that you basically have to rewrite and personalize every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a combination of like resume and demonstration.
It's a friend of mine, and this is interesting too. When he did his first writing packet, he was actually looking back nostalgically at submitting his writing packet, and he had some success in the. I don't think he writes comedy anymore, but he had some success writing comedy, and he said that his first submission was he did a spec script for the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah, I feel like spec scripts used to be a bigger thing, but still, I don't know. That's still a good way to show somebody, hey, I know how to write. Like, if you want to write a sitcom, you prove that you know how to write a sitcom.
Right, but the interesting thing, when I was, when comics were doing spec scripts, and I had would meet comics that were working on spec scripts, they would all do spec scripts for shows that were actually out there. And I thought, you know, looking back, it was probably stupid. I thought maybe I should do a spec script for Cheers. And I said, ooh, here's a great idea. Somebody approaches Cheers and decides to do stand-up comedy in the back room.
Oh, that actually would be a great Cheers.
Yeah, you know what? And I thought it would. And I sat down to work on the spec script. But then I thought about it. And I said, with all the comics out there doing spec scripts right now, do you realize the size of the stack of scripts they have of the comedy night?
Oh, sure.
And if they were to run a show that was comedy night at Cheers, do you realize how many lawsuits from comics?
Oh,
say
right, because
you
of the
took
stack
my
of-
idea. So it's. I am pretty certain that is the reason why Sam never took the call from the comedy booker.
That's very interesting, because it especially makes a sense in that you think, like, man, Cheers was on from, like, you know, 82 to 90 or whatever. Cheers was on during the absolute pinnacle of the comedy boom.
Yeah, right there.
When everybody was doing comedy. And it's such a funny thing to imagine, because, like, you know, the obvious comedy trope is you come up with a gimmick, and then you see how each different character reacts to it. So, of course, you know, everybody's going to have to dare in each other, is going to get up and try it. You're going to get to see Coach or Woody, Carla, you know, being mean to people.
Sure.
I mean, that writes itself. That would be so funny.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it probably did.
Yeah, it probably wrote itself so many times.
But a spec script, as you mentioned, a spec script's different than a writing packet.
Yeah,
writing packets are more for late night shows.
Late night
wrong?
Or sketch, especially. And I don't know. You know, maybe back in the day, there was only one show. I mean, it was a Tonight Show. That was it, right? I don't know. And I don't think you really needed a packet back then. I think you just sent jokes.
Right.
But nowadays, what they'll do is if there are a new show's coming out, or if an existent show is hiring new people, they'll put out a call to, you know, within the industry for submissions, and you have to get this packet, and it'll have pretty specific instructions. It seems to me, at least in the last few years, they've gotten even more specific. I think because they want to make sure that you don't have a big stock of, like, a big, you know, a file in your folder that's full of, like, desk pieces, because you have to write basically some monologue jokes, a script of one sketch, and a page of ideas, usually is the basic template. They all vary. Sometimes they'll have specifics about the ideas, or they'll say, you know, write jokes, monologue jokes about the days of, you know, August 7th to August 14th. Because
which makes the most sense to me. So they want you to do it on the date. They don't go back to, just in case you're one of those people that do write 100 jokes a day and submit them to no one, that they can, so that they give you a date as it happens.
Yeah, and I've always, even when they don't put a date on it, I've always still kind of kept it, I've always kept it real current because I just thought, well, they're going to kind of know the difference between generic jokes and jokes that clearly could only have been written since X time. You would like to show them that these are all very fresh. Like, it's another demonstration, you know, of that.
Right. And they probably, they also ask for them electronically, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason why is because anybody that submitted a writing packet last week that had the word Fandango in it.
I'm sure they did.
Was immediately rejected.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very funny. But the interesting thing about monologue jokes is because the core of a monologue joke is usually something pretty timeless. You know, if you are writing a lot of jokes as a practice, you can always go back in the old ones and just, pull this, you know, old Anthony Scaramucci from last segment. There'll be a new guy that you can replace take Anthony Scaramucci jokes, swap out the, you know.
Sure. I cannot tell you how many during the tenure of George Bush Jr., how many Dan Quayle jokes were recycled.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's basically the same. Or during the Iraq War, it's similar-ish when all those Bill Hicks jokes started being, like, weirdly the same. Like,
oh, yeah. The Iraq War 1 to Iraq War 2.
Yeah, even when, you know, when he would talk, he has a bit about them, like, hyping up the Iraqi army on the TV and, like, the elite Republican Guard. I mean, it was eerie how that bit sounded like it was recorded last night at an open mic at one point.
And of course, when the Trump tape dropped, I did notice a few Bill Clinton kind similar to Bill Clinton jokes.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely or you know what, the Anthony Weiner jokes and the Bill Clinton jokes were basically the same jokes.
Well, except no one's ever whipped out as Clinton.
Right. Yeah, I would say the Wiener thing. The Wiener thing is probably right up there with Scaramucci in terms of the on the nose name to crime.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like there is an intelligent being somewhere assigning names to characters in the play.
Oh, this confirms my new theory. I've figured out why life is so horrible. And it's helping me go with the flow a little better. I've realized that we are all living in a game of The Sims that God is tired of playing. He's been a long time really diligently building stuff up and managing the ecosystem and keeping everything straight. And he really delighted in watching evolution and all that. And then, but he's bored now and he's like, all right. And he's just hitting those natural disaster buttons. Cubs win the series. You know, just run the table. He's just making everything weird happen. Which is exactly what you do right before you turn the game off and go do something else.
and put the game in the bin to the Goodwill.
Yeah, yeah, right. So that's my theory. But yeah. So
So the writing packet is done and submitted?
Is done and submitted. Yeah, this one took a long time. It was
How many monologue jokes were in there?
There were no monologue jokes. This one was very specific in its request for sketches and characters and stuff. I mean, I would say there's no way I spent less than 15 hours on that.
Wow.
Probably
Did there have to be current references to show that it's current?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, wow. It all had to be – not only did it have to be taken from the news, it had to have the news sources cited. So I had to have – video clips sourced.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I think they do that sometimes, though, because they want to see who will go through all that.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, you know, it's also probably if you find some obscure news item,
mm-hmm.
they don't want to think that you just made something up.
Right.
They want to know that it is an actual news item, especially now with the amount of fake news, you know, satire news. Sure. I mean, there's always these weird little onion knockoff articles that the news is it's made up, but it sounds believable.
Well, yeah, between fake news and then satire news and then the utter absurdity of the actual goings on in the last year and a half, the blurring between when people are kidding and not has really never been more confusing. But one thing that's not confusing, it's time to end the segment.
Final segment of the Rule of Three. We are now in the final month of summer. This is it. This is the dog days, some might call it. Back to school time, which usually occurs right after 4th of July. That's when the backpacks and pencil cases come out. But it's also the time when the summer music festivals are in full swing. And you know, much like the comedy festivals, where there used to be one big one in Montreal every year, that now I think every town with a population over 100,000 has a comedy festival now.
Oh, did you see actually on Facebook, because I'm working on my schedule, I said, hey, comics, what festivals have you really enjoyed that I should look into? And the number of festivals that I got that I've never heard of, that people were saying were great.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Why not? Why not do a festival? It's a great moneymaker if you're hosting a festival.
Yeah,
because comics will pay to have you look at the videotape,
and then the comic will come and do a set for free, and you charge tickets to all the audience members, and in the end, you give somebody one person a grand. But because comics are such egomaniacs, everybody signs up for that contest thinking, yeah, but I mean, I'm gonna win the $1,000 anyway.
Yeah. Not realizing there's some local kid with a huge family that is just going to kill all week.
Yeah, or some headliner with four Letterman credits or something who pops into some festival and you're like, what the hell are you doing here? Seen that happen before.
But we have a family reunion every year, every summer, and the family reunion was this past weekend, and a bunch of the kids took off to go see the Mopop Festival in Detroit. It's funny to me is because I never thought I would be that old person that listens to the names of bands and just scratches his head. but I am now.
It happens to everybody. Well, you know what? Do you know some of the bands? Can you rattle some of them?
Well, here's what cracked me up. It was three of the bands had "the" right in the middle of their name, so it's actually like an active phrase. It's sure. Foster the People. Foster the People was one of them.
Ah, the
all the young kids.
Pumped Up Kicks.
Yeah. So that was one of them. But there were two other bands that had "the" in the middle of the name, It's, since I didn't recognize any of them, I figured, well, since I'm going to be looked at as the old fogey anyway, I might as well have some fun. So I would keep getting them wrong. So it's like, so are you going to go see Feed the Kitty? This? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's Wash the Rocket, isn't it?
Ooh, I like Wash the Rocket. Now, I got to say, I'm looking up the Mopop Festival on my phone here. One of my absolute favorite bands was there.
Who?
Run the Jewels.
See, there you go.
Love Run the Jewels. Killer Mike.
Again. With the. And it was really funny because I was saying, you know, what a stupid band name. And one of my nephews, who's like, he doesn't like anything that was, that came out after 1980. He's just in high school, but he doesn't like anything that came out after 1980, which is a little peculiar. And it was really funny because I said, oh, here's something you probably don't know, because this they don't really play this a lot on classic radio. And I play in a song for him. And he goes, who is this? I go, well, this is Mott the Hoople. Whoops.
Oh, yeah?
I guess everything old is new again,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I used to go to, I went to Bonnaroo right as it was tipping from, like, big cool thing to do to big corporate thing to do. It would have been 2005. I think there were, like, 90,000 people there that year. 80,000, 90,000 people. It was big. Camped out for 3 days. Got engaged at Bonnaroo.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's that's right. I think you might have mentioned that. I think you might have mentioned that on a previous episode, because I know the story. Is that the two of you looked at each other and said, "We're really not hippies, are we?"
Yeah.
I was like, "Nah. Well, I guess we're perfect for each other."
Yeah. What could be more anti-hippie than like, let's get married officially? Let's go ask the government and the church if we can have sex.
I think also a topic we covered in a previous podcast was the Fire Festival.
Oh right, the failed music festival. I mean, music festival is something that it is perfect for young people, because when you're young, you just want to be around as many people as possible. Like it's funny that like I think it's just pure biology, right? I think young people just want to press up against other young people. Because that's all
yeah.
that they're.
Yeah, hormones no, are. That happened to me. Is some kids after a show? Some kids wanted me to buy them a beer. they realized that comics will buy a couple pitchers if you take them to the bar. So I said, yeah, okay, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of this hotel. Let's go, and so we go to the hangout. And we go in, and it's just packed. It's just chest to back.
Yeah.
It's just uncomfortable. And I go, wow, I don't think I'm going to last long here. And I go to the restroom. Did we talk about this in a previous podcast? Okay.
No.
So I say, I'm just going to use the washroom and then maybe grab a cab and go home. And I go to use the washroom. And as soon as I get through this area, there's no one in the bar.
Huh.
It's actually like a little cluster of them all pressing together. And I get to the bar and I have it all to myself. It was the weirdest thing. I guess it never occurred to me how much kids just enjoy that.
Yeah, mosh pits, just big crowd. I mean, a music festival is just, you know, at the front of the stage, it's just a press of people. And like, there are people who really, you know, when you're young, you really like that. And you get to a certain age, I think, you know, once the sort of the intensity of the biological urge to reproduce, you're like, you know, this would probably work out better if we had a little elbow room.
Yeah. You know, your kids are kind of crowding my space here.
Yeah, it's like when you're young, I remember we used to like, we would be up as close to the stage as we could get, and we would always laugh about it. Hey, look at the lamos way up on the top of the hill of the amphitheater, like on their blankets, sitting down, you know. and we were having more fun. But I think that's because when you're young, you have that intensity of feeling. It's like the same thing that makes you want to jam up against everybody is the same thing that makes you, you know, it's like this crazy fun. But then it also sucks, and you're sort of blind to the suck of it until you get a little older, and you're like, nah, that kind of sucks.
Also, I think the reason why the music festivals are popular is that there is a notion with the young people today that music should be free.
Yeah, I think people like the idea of like, all right, I mean, I paid $150. Well, some of you don't have to pay to get into. Like you said, it's the free downtown stuff. But even if you pay to get in, it's like you pay your $20 and then you can just sort of wander from thing to thing. You know, you can sort of create your own playlist more so.
Yeah, and it really is a weird thing to think of, because when I was young, that's why you got the job at McDonald's, was to buy records and a stereo. And now it's you don't have a stereo. It's just on the phone that your parents bought you for Christmas, and you don't pay for the music anymore. His music should be free, and it's also a it, 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 You have to have, you can't just have one band. The days of, you know, the Who performing at a football stadium and people lining up for days to get those tickets are long gone. You've got to have 20 bands for people to even be interested in a show anymore.
Yeah, I mean, maybe these music festivals have kind of spoiled people in that sense, where it's like, you know, like you said, there's so many of them, and they, you know, they cram a bunch of people on there, and then it's like, well, you could see all of those guys in one go around, or you could hit them one at a time. It just doesn't feel effective use of your time.
Sure, sure.
But also the sort of, you know, when you're younger, more. What's better than seeing two bands? What if we saw 40 bands? Oh my God! And like, what I realized as I was kind of just cresting that I'm too old to do this was like, by the third day, my ears just couldn't discern anything anymore. It was all just
tired of sitting in the grass, tired of sleeping in a tent, tired of the eardrums hurting. And
I enjoy when I see, like you say, hear about your family going there. I'm like, I bet those kids had a great time, and I actually would have gone just to see Run the Jewels, but then I would have left. but I would have absolutely gone to see Run the Jewels. But it's like a great thing for young people, and it's kind of it's good for them. But like, whew, my days of that are over.
And so is this segment. You can catch all the segments at timslegel.com, on Twitter, at Tim Slegel, at Tim Slegel on Facebook, too. On iTunes, leave us some comments. Give us some criticism. Rate us. Rate us highly.
Yeah, and check it out, BrianMiller.com, or BrianMillerComedy.com, and Real Brian Miller with a Y on Twitter. Also, someone told me that my Twitter link on my website is weird, so but my webmaster says it's working fine, so if you go to it and it's weird, you should go.
And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.